and welcome everybody to this episode of 90s Court. We are officially in spooky season. Andy, do you have a good spooky ghost? There it is. I knew you could deliver. I'm Lisa Monahan.
And I'm your co-ghost, Andy.
Oh my gosh. Co-ghost if is, anybody is very
like,
good.
Everybody, like anybody who is a new listener just turned the podcast off immediately. They're like, listen,
you had me at hello. You lost me at co-ghost.
You lost me at the co-ghost thing by Andy. So, hey, everybody. Oh. Yeah, thank you guys for tuning in to 90s Court.
That's right. Welcome.
56.
Thank you. If you have not listened to the show before, welcome. This is a good time to pop in, for it is Halloween season. Our show is not about court cases from the 90s. Instead, we take two very awesome things from the 90s, talk about them in great length in a comedic way most of the time, and then put them up in against each other in court. And before we get to court, which is usually after our break, we have a little tie off into the 90s where Andy talks about something he likes and I talk about something I mm-hmm. like from the 90s, and it's a whole thing. So kick back, relax, because we're about to take a train back to the 90s. But
yes, yeah, sir, that's and the name. Madam.
That's
and
the general gist of the show.
Yeah, and I think it's I always appreciate like this, because the thing is giving an intro at the beginning to people maybe who have listened a million times and like, why do they keep mm-hmm. doing this? I like, generally speaking, if somebody wants to start listening to the show, I'm going to recommend a later episode. So like, usually yeah. I'm like, I want the intro to be in there so they know what's going on. The yeah. last thing I would want them to do is to tune into episode one.
I don't just know,
like,
man.
I like listening Twister? To people living in dumpsters, literally just in a dumpster talking to each other. That is what our first episode sounded like.
Fun fact, episode one was recorded with two aluminum cans and a string.
It's weird. It was a very long string because she lives in Texas and I live in Illinois. But
that's
we
the other
did
thing.
It.
We are a long distance podcast. So
and we just each had a talk boy next to our can recording the audio.
So that's the gist of our show. We love it. We've been doing this for over a year now. It is honestly one of the highlights of my week every week. And so
yes.
It's one of the things we do. But
yeah. Yeah. So anyways, yeah. Hey, I'd just like to give a quick shout out this week to our wonderful patrons on Patreon. Just an FYI to any of you who love the show, want to support the show in any way, shape, or form. You've probably heard this before, but patreon.com/90scourt. You can subscribe at various different levels, get various different perks. So even if you just want to check it out and see what it's all about, you can just look around and see if maybe it'd be something you'd be into. But we do have to give our bi-weekly shout outs to our glorious bailiffs. So I'm going to be shouting out a few, and then we'll shout out the rest of them, of course, next week.
Woohoo!
To our illustrious bailiffs, Timmy Tim. I start to say, like, I'm going to say, like, their last
Tim
name,
Tim.
And I remember we don't do last names on this thing. Timmy McTimerson, who Tim has Tim. Been with us from almost since the beginning of our Patreon days. Thank you so much, Tim, for continuing to support us. Nate, as always, love your feedback and all of the stuff that you put out there. Jason, it has been fun. I know you're a little bit newer on the Patreon, and I love your activity and your comments and everything like that. It really keeps us on our toes and having fun. Mm-hmm. Preston, one of the OGs, our
OG.
Man. He's like the Twitter man who's just always on top of everything on there. Thank you so much for your support. And of course, Lindsay, our newest patron this past week. Absolute delight, very funny and very hilarious, and we're super glad to have you on board. So anyways, thank you all again for your support.
We love you guys. Thank you. And again, if any of our patrons, one of the benefits they get is a set of stickers from the show. I believe I've hit most of you guys, if not all of you guys, mm-hmm. with stickers. If I've not, hit us up on Patreon. I'm going to set it right for you, baby.
Unless you just feel like, I absolutely refuse to take stickers from you.
I refuse to. Yeah. Well, we have several of them. They're just burning a hole in my junk drawer. So please, guys, help me. Help me out. So as we said earlier, before we get to the court aspect of the show, we cover things. And this week, my thing is a whole thing, and I went back and forth all week long on my thing, but I settled on something that I think is good, okay? As I said at the beginning of the show, Andy, we are officially in spooky season, yes?
Uh-huh.
Yes, we are in spooky season. So I spent a lot of time thinking about scary music videos from the 90s, because I was scared easily as a child, and the 90s were scary in general. And so I was like, Thriller, no bitch, that was 84. I was like, okay. I super missed that one, okay? And while not much is actually scarier than watching Hootie and the Blowfish perform anything, I kept coming back to one song and one video that stuck out pretty hard to me. So I've got...
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the just...
That.
I mean, that I don't want to say any of the lyrics because...
You
frankly,
can't say any of the lyrics.
It is, just like... It just really just punches. It's like, hey, listen, I know you like music, but have you ever tried just being attacked verbally on the air?
Have you ever been like assaulted just by existing? That's what that song is. That's what this is. And so that song is, of course, Nine Inch Nails Closer. No big deal. It's a huge, scary song, a huge, scary video. Let's get into it a little bit. That song came out in 1994. I think I read that it was like April or May, which me, I wrote my show notes. We were eight years old when this song came out, so it seems later to me than it was, but we were way too young
that's
to have
seen
this.
So many things on this show is when I see like, oh, that thing came out in 1991, I was six. Like, how did I like it's amazing to me.
Did this not explain so much about like why we are so messed up? Perhaps be like, I'm broken inside. My whole existence is flawed, as Trent Reznor would say. Thank you, Nine Inch Nails, for that. So the original director's cut, the director being Mark Romanek, was so gnarly that they had to make like a ton of edits in a really clever way, but they had to make a ton of edits to make it even remotely playable on TV. And even then, the edited version is like, therapy. And there's a lot to it, but before we even get to the video itself, the song is a whole thing. Okay, the music is a shrill and piercing synthesizer tone, and it like pitches up. Well, that was what I just did. Let's see, are we still there? Where are we? Nope. Is it gonna play? My phone said.
Oh, you're trying
mind.
To get your thing to play.
Yeah, it was like no, but you heard it earlier. It like starts off and it pitches up. It just makes your butt tingle, and not in a good way. It's just kind of spooky. It's a good song, but like, and the lyrics are so. If you recall, Andy, the lyrics are, "I want to hug you, like an animal."
Oh.
I want to hug you from the inside.
Man, I don't understand why they later on changed the lyrics to something so graphic. The originals seemed like they were pretty chill.
I think that I actually, can I be honest, I Googled if there was a kids' bop version of this song. Because I would give anything to hear kids be like, I want to hug you like some teddy bears. I don't know. I don't want children to be involved in the song at all. I take all that back. Rewind 5 seconds. That never happened. I just wanted to see if they had even tried to make a clean version of this. In fact, someone had edited a version of this song, and it was just like, I want to. And it was just dead silent. I was like, yeah, you can't say some of the songs. The song is just very sexually aggressive, okay? Mm-hmm. If you're listening to this podcast, you've heard the song. If you haven't heard the song, go listen to it and then come back and be like, she was right. You can't say that on television. You can't do that on television.
Do you remember Danimals from the 90s?
Yes.
Okay. I was like, I want to eat you like some Danimals.
Oh my gosh. That's great.
I wasn't supposed to be graphic. It was supposed to be, more of a fun, solid piece for kids.
Danimals, that one's on the house. We just
you're welcome.
We just gave you a free marketing
line it up,
campaign.
Guys.
Just Danimals, just
line get it. Oh my god, announced a re-release of their product. They're like, we're coming back, and this time Nine Inch Nails are
Trent Reznor's like, finally. I'm ready. This song it has a really strong driving beat, as you could hear. It makes you antsy and uncomfortable, especially if you're 9 years old, or maybe if you're 45 and looking at your 9-year old watch this video and you're like, this is a mistake. Everything is a mistake. Cable is a mistake. Everything is a mistake.
I'll say this though about that jam, and you might mention this, like some of the piano, like when it gets quiet and that, they have some pretty good eerie and very cool parts when it's just like a little bit of guitar and the piano playing notes in the background. That's less annoying than the mad synthesizer part and saying very graphic things.
And so you're right, sound and lyrics are one side of this coin. The other side is the video. Okay, and let's start off talking about the video. Okay, it starts off with an anatomic heart that's beating. Sorry, my cats are having a wrestling match beside me.
You know, it'd be really weird if it was just like a Valentine heart beating.
Just like, yeah, don't worry about it. But no, it's Oh, it starts off there and it gets worse like immediately, because shortly thereafter you see the monkey like tied to a cross, which is like a big nope. Can't do that. Then shortly thereafter you see Trent Reznor standing and singing in front of a completely fully like open carcass. Sure, that's good. That's normal. Normal Wednesday getting ready for school stuff. That's fine. And then shortly thereafter he's levitating and spinning on his back, which means he's just a really good lead singer. I don't know if you knew that. That's the criteria. That's what it means. You spin and levitate? Yeah. And then there's a pig's head with an apple in its mouth just spinning. I was like, that's a lot. And then Trent is also in black latex gloves and like a ball gag. And it's like, I'm 8 years old. What is eight? 8 years old is what, third grade?
That's the crazy thing. I always forget like grades, because I feel like fifth grade was like first. I'm 5 years old was like first grade, or no, maybe in kindergarten.
Kinder. And then Kinder,
sixth,
yeah.
Sixth grade. Yeah, first, so six was first. So I'd say like third grade.
Yeah, third grade. So you're at third grade watching Trent Reznor with a ball gag. You're like, that's weird. Where's the stick to his lollipop? That's odd. And then you're just like, everything is awful. And then so you've got everything is so awful. And it's a hypersexual, deeply disturbing video. And it certainly stands out as probably one of the most notable music videos of the decade, if not all time, because music videos have waned in like interestingness since the 90s. I don't think there's as much importance put on them in as much as there used to be, but I don't know. It certainly ranks up there with like the most fucked up things you can put together, both lyrically, both altogether, lyrically, musically, and visually. It was number one on VH1's 20 greatest music videos of all time. This was something they did in 2006.
Number one.
I mean, of all the greatest music videos, there are some good ones. It's not going to be, I mean, Michael Jackson certainly had some banger videos, but like this one goes for the throat.
What about and Limp not,
and it, I shouldn't have said that. I didn't.
I mean, there's gotta be like, I was like at least one Limp Bizkit one that I was just like, I think I've just saw it so many times that that's the only reason that that came out of my mouth.
Oh, for sure. No, well, it was something I said, but Nookie certain. I think probably Nookie's definitely a better music video.
Why did it take so long? Why did it take so long to figure it out for myself?
Wow, you. Oh my gosh, it's as if Fred Durst had just entered your room and began rapping.
Here's the thing:
so
is
well.
it's. There's certain things that you do ironically because you're making fun of it that you just end up knowing all the words to a song. But
you just
hate.
End up knowing. Yes. Yes. And that's probably my way with Nickelback.
Oh, for sure. Mine with Creed, for sure.
Oh, Creed. Yeah, for sure. So I don't know. That look Closer. Nine Inch Nails. You got to pay homage. Nine Inch Nails is a great band. Closer was a iconic song, iconic video, disturbing by all, like to the max. Spooky music video bit end scene. Oh, go take a bath, everybody.
Yeah, guys, so, take a bath. So I'm going to give you like 5 seconds pause, and then I'm going to start talking about my thing.
Hopefully it's a little bit more PG than whatever the hell
I would
brought.
Say, yeah, it's definitely more PG. It's one of those things that it's fun to make fun of, but it also ruled. So it's kind of a mixed bag. So I haven't done one of these in a while, which is I bring video games a pretty good amount. I've been bringing certain things, but this one is literally, I did not intend this to be because I'm like, oh, it's Halloween season and we're doing a Halloween episode or whatever. I literally just picked it and then realized, holy shit, this is also a very creepy game. So this is a board game.
Okay.
I will say this. This might not hit everybody, but if it does hit you, you are going to be very excited.
Okay.
So
I'm ready.
I'm going to play a quick commercial for the game, and then we'll go over the game itself and how dope it was. Actually, let me rewind it so you can hear.
Gosh.
The sound, the nightmare, the game, Atmosphere.
Okay, so you didn't get to see a lot of the imagery on here, which is
okay.
It's Atmosphere with an F, so Atmos and then Fear. This game has been created and recreated multiple times.
Okay.
Now I will say there is one game in particular that I played numerous times as a child. A friend had it, and so like when we'd go over there, it was just We didn't usually, like, it wasn't every time that we'd have enough people or enough people with enough patience to play a game for this long, but when we did, it was so dope. So just to go over what this game Atmosphere is. So the first version of it came out in 1991. It was not called Atmosphere at the time. It was called Nightmare. And I believe there was Nightmare 2, Nightmare 3, Nightmare 4. And then in 1995 is when Atmosphere, The Harbingers, came out. And so that is the game we're talking about here. There have been several redos, in fact, including a 2019 reboot of Atmosphere as well, which I did also watch a gameplay version of that. It's a little bit different, but it still has the same general element. So in this game, pull up my notes. Basically, let me first off start. The first instructions of the game is turn the lights down and the volume up and welcome to the other side.
Yikes.
So you're basically, you have this big board that is composed of like six different slatted pieces of different colors. And the general premise is that there is a videotape that is playing. The videotape will start out and it gives you like a very detailed version of the rules, obviously with some entertaining people in masks and things like that doing creepy stuff. Because it's like all these characters are like, you're supposed to be like, you're a witch or you become, or you're like a skeleton or just all these different things that are ridiculous. But the general point of the game is that there is a guy called the Gatekeeper, who is this guy that basically is Emperor Palpatine from Star Wars.
Okay.
Like to a T, it's the voice and everything would just, hello, loves. Like he'll just be like, stop. Whose turn is it next? Hands up. And he'll during the entire game, he will just interrupt. It'll be like this really intense music with just showing like stars and smoke and everything like that. And all of a sudden his face appears on the screen and he tells you to stop. And then, you know, because you're playing this board game rolling dice and you're trying to go as fast as you can because there is a 60-minute time limit. And when it hits 60 minutes, you all die.
Oh, my gosh.
So
this is OK. So this is like Eyes Wide Shut meets Saw meets Star Wars.
Sure.
Is what I'm getting.
With loose Star Wars. But yeah,
also,
sure.
Also some Settlers of Catan for the board game aspect.
Yeah, the board game aspect is very, very Settlers of Catan-ish. So, at the beginning of the game, each person writes down their worst fear on a slip of paper and seals it into this little plastic canister in the center of the board. Usually, worst fears would consist of things like so many boners or something that was completely nonsense. I just said so many boners because I'm like, I'm positive that we just, because nobody was putting actual real fears. Like, it was always funny when we drew one, it was like spiders and we're like, oh, we were expecting it to be something ridiculous, but.
Well, I would be like, I don't know, dying alone or like Golden Corral going out of business or something. Like those would be my worst fears.
Golden Corral going out of business.
I would be so devastated. Their mac and cheese is powdery and it's very good. But those are my worst fears and I would put it down and then I would be like, I'd be like, oh, wow, who wrote that? Gosh, yeah, so many boners.
The nice thing is that there's only one possible way in which they will find out what is yours. So you put those in the little thing and you twist it and you seal it in the middle. And then the point is you start out as these skulls called numbskulls.
Of course.
And you have 10 minutes to become a harbinger. And what a harbinger is basically there's different parts of the board. Like it's divided into six pieces. And on each part of the board, there is a figurine, like kind of like a Monopoly figure of some sort, sitting in a certain place. And you have to roll exactly to get onto that spot. And someone could also just come and fuck you and steal that piece. And then you have to keep going. If you don't reach a piece by the time the 10 minutes is up, then you get to play basically an entirely different game. And it's actually not bad. It's actually pretty fun being either one. Because after that happens, the people who became harbingers, and harbingers means like you have a fancier piece and you can actually win the game, basically.
Okay.
The people who did not get it are, what are they called? It's such a good name for them. A Soul Ranger, which is the dopest name ever.
That's really good.
You're basically skeleton wearing a leather jacket riding a motorcycle, which is pretty dope. At least that's how they illustrate you on the actual video. And your purpose at that point is basically just to fuck over the other players constantly.
Perfect.
Because you can do all kinds of stuff, just like landing on their spot, taking their keys. Because the point of the game is, you're like, once you become this Harbinger, you have to get one color, one key on every color, and then land in your little cubby hole in the middle of the board, and then you have to roll a six. So you land in the cubby hole, and you have to, every turn, you roll, it's not a six, too bad, you just sit there. You roll six, and then you're like, okay, good. So if you roll a six, then you unscrew the top in the middle, you pull out a worst fear. If it is your worst fear, you basically throw it away, and then you still are not, you don't win the game. You're still sitting there, and you have to keep trying to roll a six.
Okay.
If you do roll and you draw somebody else's worst fear, then you win the game and you shut off the tape. The cool thing about this game was that it was super suspenseful, not because like, oh my gosh, how scary is this guy? Oh my gosh, I'm terrified. Because it was comical, like how like ridiculous this guy. Like think about, like I said, Emperor Palpatine talking to you the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But
you say that as if I know who Emperor Palpatine is, and I'm very...
You've never seen Star Wars?
Not one.
Wow.
Not one. I know. You can flame me after the show if you need to for that one.
It's all right. Hey. None of them are in the 90s. Oh, no, wait. I guess episode one was in the 90s, but other than that, we won't count it. So, like I said, so in the game, it's very tense. You're basically trying to screw each other over. There's a bunch of different rules and stuff like that that go in the game, too. But the general purpose, like I said, is you're either, you know, either become a Harbinger, try and get all these keys and beat the game as quickly as possible. And that's the thing, is people are rolling really fast. So it's a very fast-paced game because, obviously, like, people want to win the game.
Because mm-hmm.
the worst-case scenario is just nobody wins. And then you're like, well, cool. Glad we could all die.
But your parents are happy because you burned 60 minutes of your life.
They're probably
and
pretty
that's 60 minutes that they were able to watch Home Improvement uninterrupted.
Yeah, I would say this is probably for like early teenagers and stuff like that, maybe like even like 11 to like 17 or something like that. Not so much like 8 and 9 year, because it could probably get a little spooky, and probably the rules are maybe a little bit heavy for an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old. But yeah, so basically it was just it was a super fun game to play with a lot of friends and stuff. And the concept of the video, because the thing is, the video doesn't change, right? It's the same fucking video every time.
Yes.
But because of the speed of the game and who starts when and everything like that, when he tells you to stop, and he'll usually say whose turn is it next, and then you know, you raise your hand, and then he then says like, you're banished to a black hole or something like that. And then you have to move. And it's basically, there's these different things that'll happen where either you're screwed or you get to screw somebody else, or you get a boon of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time it's just you're screwed and he's laughing about it. So,
atmosphere.
Yeah. So
interesting
atmosphere. So anyways, atmosphere. Nothing really funny to say about this game. It's funny if you could listen to the voices and everything like that and watch the video,
mm-hmm.
because the video is just so absurd when they're showing, like, especially when they're doing the rules and going through that. In the background, they have these various like ghouls and like a vampire and all this stuff, like playing this game and like acting very serious about it while they're playing this board game and like screaming and stuff in the background while this guy's doing the rules for the game. But anyways, Atmosphere.
F-E-A-R. Jeez, Andy.
Atmosphere.
See, board games always have so many rules and there's so many nuances that I'm like, I'm bored. And I just go back to playing like Phase 10 or Uno or something, because I'm like...
You're kind of like, you're the worst, so just...
I am the worst. No, that's okay. I have several friends that are like super into board games. I'm like, no thanks.
It's one of those things where if you take the time to get to know how to play a board game, mm-hmm. you're like, holy shit, I don't have to learn how to play this ever again. Like, so all you have to do is just sit down for and be a little bit frustrated for maybe like 45 minutes to an hour.
Probably. But that's not how we work anymore. You need like instant gratification. Yeah. We need to be able to swipe left, swipe right on these rules and be like, no, I'm not doing that rule.
Tinder swipes on board games.
Tinder swipes on board games. So, yeah. Well, thank you, Andy, for Atmosphere. Thank
You're
you for
welcome.
That. Before we go on a break, I wanted to mention the fact that Andy and I are going to be guest hosts on a podcast. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, maybe this week sometime. It's called the Halloween Podcast.
Yes.
Can you imagine getting that good of a name for your podcast?
The Halloween Podcast. I've said that yeah. so many times since I was like, that is the best get for a name like ever. So in theory, where he's doing, I think, a 31 nights of Halloween. So he has like a new episode every day.
All 90s themed, right?
And they're all 90s this year,
which
and
is
so,
tough.
Yeah.
Tough. Yeah.
I mean, some of them have been pretty cool. I mean, because you could do some wild movies and stuff to cover, but we're doing. We'll find out. We don't want to get spoilers.
Yeah, you'll find out. Yeah, we'll let the it's called the Halloween Podcast. Not sure when that's coming out. We'll give more details whenever. We haven't yet recorded it, so whenever that comes out, we'll be sure to let you guys know. But that is coming up this week, and we have a quick little promo from another show we want you guys to check out. And we're gonna take a quick break, and on the flip side, we'll get to court cases. Okay.
All right.
See you in a few.
Bye.
Okay, Lauren, if you had to pick your favorite, NSYNC or Backstreet Boys?
NSYNC? Are you kidding? Okay, what about you? Nickelodeon or Disney Channel?
Nickelodeon! Cinderella Story or Brandy Cinderella?
Jeanette, how dare you put me in that position?
Very sorry. Want to hear more about everything else 90s and early 2000s?
Listen and subscribe to the All That and a Bottle of Wine, a pop culture podcast discussing the best decades, the 90s and early 2000s.
Available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Welcome back to 90s Court.
Aloha.
What a wonderful break. Did you guys enjoy it as much as we did?
I gave Andy some of my deep, deep thoughts about...
about babies and random belly buttons.
Right, babies and belly buttons. We won't get into it on the show, but if you ever want to ping me and be like, excuse me, what? I'm available for
that's
you.
That's the deep content we only provide to like top tier patrons.
Yes, this is true. Maybe that should be part of our spooky Halloween show. It's just me having high thoughts or something. So
like, instead of that, I'm going to like next week for our next Halloween is like, it's Lisa's thoughts about belly buttons versus Andy's something.
Andy's deepest fears. Mine is still Golden Corral. Listen, last week we did Maury Povich versus Jerry Springer. Check this out. Facebook. Mm-hmm. Wow, this is a very interesting poll. Facebook, 70-30 in favor of Maury. Twitter, 72-28 in favor of Jerry Springer versus Maury Povich. Instagram straight went 50-50.
I literally, like, seeing that, I was like, well, at least Instagram will break it one way or the other. And Instagram's like, nah, fam, we're going to be the least helpful imaginable.
No, they were. Thank you guys for participating in the Instagram poll. But yeah, you did not break it. So that's okay. But so Andy counted all the votes, did the math. It came out 53.8% in favor of Maury. So Maury Povich won. I really did not see that one coming. I thought
obviously,
Jerry Springer would have been a
like,
clear winner.
I flat out made the statement before we even started the court case that Lisa gave me Jerry because she's like, well, you're doing a thing you don't want to do, so I'll at least let you win. Like, yeah. I thought for sure that was a slam dunk, but I guess name recognition doesn't necessarily mean you like it.
That's true. And I know that we unofficially told Phil this was his job to keep tabs of who wins everything. I'm sure he hasn't done anything, but Phil marked this one down as a Lisa win. Unexpected Lisa win, even though you're not taking notes. Yeah. You're not taking notes, but that's okay. That's all good. So that's the poll results from last week. Maury Povich won by a hair.
Yeah.
A beautiful gray hair upon his beautiful gray head.
Yeah. Well, hey, gang, you all know it's Halloween time. I heard somebody make a joke about this the other day, or make a thing that was confusing, and I don't understand it anymore. About the fact that Halloween time is the one time of year you can wear a mask and have nobody think it's weird, and then they're like, "Well, now you can do that all the time."
Every day is Halloween if you try hard.
Every day is Halloween. So there's somebody standing in front of me with a mask with a knife. Anyway, something just came across my desk. Ba-dum-bum.
It's Jason.
Just so everybody knows, it is a friend of mine who has done some charcuterie, and he just wanted to make sure that the platter looked good before I let him go. So
okay.
It is looking good, and he said he'll murder me after the show, so I have a little bit more time. Okay.
That's okay. You have time. Well, take all the time you need on your court case, because apparently that's a wrap on you.
Yeah, apparently I'm going to need to drag this bad boy out and just hope that he forgets that's what he was planning to do.
Yeah.
Or hurry it up so he's not done with the charcuterie and I can sneak out the back door. Anyways. We, as we've mentioned, are covering a couple of spooky things, which I consider these to be, like, when I think of 90s scary movies, this is automatically what I think of with the
90s. Yes. Yeah.
They are just the most stereotypical, because, like, yeah, I mean, there's It, and there's, you know, Blair Witch Project that we covered last year. Those are good, but I don't really think of them as 90s. These ones are just so, it's so hard to separate them from the 90s. So we are bringing you Scream versus I Know What You Did Last Summer.
It wasn't very.
It was not as enthusiastic for the yours.
Summer was boring. Yeah. Summer was my last summer was boring. This summer, however,
I know what you did last summer, and frankly, I'm worried about you.
I saw what you did last summer, and I'm telling. I'm telling mom.
That's
I'm
the entire mom. Movie. Is just like he just tells the cops, and they're like, "Well,
that was easy.
Why did you wait an entire year to report us?" And they're like I don't know.
Got busy. You know, after a certain time when you like have waited too long to respond to a message, and then it just gets awkward. That's what this was. Yes. So here we are, a year later. That's what this is. So Andy is up first with Scream, yeah. And I'm honestly, I mean, Scream's going to win by a landslide because it is a good movie and it deserves to win. If it doesn't win, there's nothing right in this world. But
everything's broken. Sorry.
Everything's broken.
Scream. It's a movie.
It's a movie.
Congratulations. That's the end of my case.
You did it.
So 1996, Wes Craven film. I'm going to give you a quick number.
Oh, Wes Craven. That's
a quick
right.
couple numbies for you. Budget, $14 to $15 million. If you had to guess the box office for a rated R film, what would you say?
For Scream, we hadn't had a movie like this in a long time before Scream came out. So you said, I would say 80 million,
somewhere around that.
80 million.
Okay.
Yeah.
$173 million.
Much better than I expected.
I will say this, evidently, I mean, I'll list, actually, you know what, that's in the trivia, I'll talk about that later, but huge box office, evidently, for a horror movie that came out in December.
It came out in December?
Yep.
What?
There's another trivia about that that's kind of cute, and I liked it.
Okay.
So Scream is credited with literally revitalizing the horror genre in general, which I know it sounds like, that sounds like way over the top, but evidently, in the 90s, horror was basically a bunch of shitty B movies that were coming straight out to DVD and stuff, VHS. Aside from, you know, like It that came out in 1990, I guess, again, I didn't do any research on this. This is just what the article says, that it was credited with bringing it back. Because pretty much before that, it was just everything was floundering. So
there was also some weird stuff too. Like, I always get this wrong. I think like Nightmare on Elm Street, that was all 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think like, okay. I mean, I don't know like what the years for like various movies that are scary but aren't really like horror genre, like fucking Ernest Scared Stupid. That movie scared the piss out of me when I was a kid.
It really did me too. It was spooky.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that, and I mean, there's other ones with like monsters in it, but it's not necessarily like a horror movie. But anyways, so this is considered a slasher movie, which is notable because like slasher films are not my favorite type of film. Usually I like a little bit more suspense, a little bit more creepy and grittiness and everything like that with a good story. But again, I don't usually love horror movies on the whole. So the most notable fact about this movie and what made it kind of very, very unique was how meta it is. And meta meaning that it would reference actual horror movies all the time. It would reference common tropes in horror movies, like things that people do. They even had a list of like, if you do this, you're going to die. If you do this, you're going to die. So just a bunch of different things that they would list in there that made it kind of... very real, because it's like we're talking about a world that is very like ours, where these things, you know, because they have the same movies and everything like that, so presumably it's in our world essentially. So also less important, I don't know why I mentioned this.
Less important,
but they reference Clueless at least twice in this film.
In what instances?
Due to the, because this, like, at least like three people multiple times say the terms as if. And
perfect.
And I just think it's funny because I'm like, oh yeah, Clueless came out like the year before, so whatever. I mean, I guess that's kind of why, like for example, in Wayne's World was referencing Terminator 2, the year after. So, So, title screen.
Title screen.
It's the beginning of the movie. Sound of a landline ringing and the wonderful image of Drew Barrymore with a short blonde bob. And so, like, the whole beginning sequence, somebody else is talking about Scream because they just had watched it. And I said, they're asking for their feedback on it. And I said, I happen to watch it for our show. And frankly, I think that the opening series with Drew Barrymore was amazing. And it all went downhill from there.
Yeah.
I think, and that's the thing, is a lot of people really love this movie, so I don't want to diss on it. But the opening sequence, it's like, here is how the whole thing works when the horror, when it's things are going well and the killers are at their best, right? And then the rest of the film is like either not the killers or the killers fucking up just over and over again. And it was the Drew Barrymore scene was like the sequence of scenes, that whole sequence at the beginning before, like, you know, anything else was just.
It was good.
And then it's like, you know, there's like these creepy things, like, because you don't really know what's going on, you know, first watching the movie, which is weird because, you know, I'm watching this through the lens of I know what the general premise of this movie is. But when it first came out, I imagine it was pretty terrifying because he's just this random guy who's calling this, you know, pretty girl and just talking to her. He's got this really smooth, kind of rough voice as he's talking to her. In fact, let me just play a quick clip of that.
Sure. Let's hear it.
Here's how.
Okay. So, I mean, there's a million other things that just happened to be the beginning of that, but it just to play the guy's voice.
I forgot how it's very specific. That's super unnerving. Yeah. I don't like that.
But I mean, there's like this, the first time that you realize something is wrong in the conversation is, he said, cause he'd asked her multiple times what her name was. And then like, they've been talking, they were actually kind of getting along and talking and having fun at that time. And then all of a sudden he said, by the way, you never told me your name. And she's, and then he said, I want to know who I'm looking at.
Oh.
And she said, what? And she said, and he said, oh, I said, I want to know who I'm talking to. And like from there on, it just, it's so suspenseful like the entire time. And that's why I love the beginning sequence of that. And it's just, I feel like they could have done a better job of providing that level of suspense and stuff later on in the movie versus just being, hey, here's a sequence of a lot of people running away from a guy in a costume. Just the entire rest of the movie is that. And then here's a clip of Henry Winkler again.
I guess I don't remember the rest of it not being as scary as that first
I don't know.
Part.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It might just be my bias of kind of like I forgot. And so like I was fully expecting to go into this to like make fun of it. And then the opening sequence, I was like, holy shit, actually, this is pretty creepy and pretty good. And maybe it was that after I thought, okay, this is going to be good, then it kind of let me down after that. So, let's see. So, yeah, the whole sequence, I have a lot more notes on this entire thing. I'm not going to read the entire thing, but it's basically, the whole thing is, you know, he has to do this trivia thing, because apparently he's got she's got her boyfriend tied up out in the back, and he's got to do this, she answers these trivia questions and she gets one wrong. Specifically, it's trivia questions about horror movies. And she says, who's the killer in Jason or Friday the 13th? And she said Jason, and that's wrong because actually it was Jason Voorhees' mom who did the killing in the first one. So then all of a sudden she has to turn the lights off. And then as that happens, and then you turn the lights back on and the fucking boyfriend has just been fucking gutted. So yeah, a lot of very bad stuff. The terrifying part of it was like, I like how they made the horror guy, the bad guy in this movie, very human. Not because most movies, it's like it's a fucking superhuman dude, and like nobody's gonna fuck with this guy. But like, so many times people just kick him and he falls over. You know, like they could. A lot of these like women could have just apparently beaten the shit out of this guy because they get the better of him often, especially Neve Campbell later in the movie. But so she, like, Drew Barrymore takes, like, 3 stabs in various parts of her body, kicks the dude with all this blood gushing, is, like, walking slowly trying to get to the porch, and is, like, probably 10 feet from her parents who are coming in the doorway. but she can't scream because he cut her throat. And then all of a sudden it's him grabbing her and pulling her back. And then a few minutes later, you see her strung up on a tree, just wide open. Super cool scene, huh?
Very fun.
But yeah,
a lot of open carcasses in this show. I am so sorry.
They were just like, listen, we want to show you that we can do scary things.
We went too far.
So the majority of the movie then from that point is that, like, hey, there's this killer on the loose. It's really scary. And Neve Campbell is the main character, clearly, from that point on. And they're all high schoolers, of course. So there had been a murder almost exactly a year before, which involved Neve Campbell's mother, who was murdered. And supposedly they got the guy who did it. And he was like on a death row at that point because he'd just been convicted. And he was basically accused and convicted. And Courtney Cox is an overly aggressive reporter and just busts into fucking everything. It's just like, I'm important. I'm going to go wherever the fuck I want basically this entire time. I will say it was terrific watching Courtney Cox, who clearly was being kind of a bitch the entire time, get decked by Neve Campbell because apparently she was writing a book about the death of her mom. So she wasn't like super stoked about that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, throughout the movie, it's kind of like, you know, a lot of the movie is just like trying to figure out who the killer is. And that's, okay. I think that the whole part, like, just kind of bored me a little bit, maybe because I kind of had a vague memory of who they were. And so I was not as excited or surprised when I found out who they were.
Yes.
But end of it, of course, there's a big party. And going to the party, I will say that Neve Campbell and her friend did decide that the best thing for a party for a bunch of high school students was to buy a fuck ton of plain Tostitos, assorted popsicles, and a pint of ice cream. They ran a grocery store at one part, and that's what they walked out with.
Isn't that what you ate in high school? That's what I ate in high school.
Like, I don't know if I'd bring a pint of ice cream to a party.
A single pint. Guys, don't worry. Yeah, there are 37 people here. Don't worry.
Each of us are going to get a spoonful. Don't worry.
So
there's a lot of people at this party or watching outside because Neve Campbell had been attacked previously by the Scream guy and escaped. And so this officer, who is clearly just, you know, a fucking dunce for the most part, who is in love with Courtney Cox's character, they're kind of together and they're watching from the outside and everything. Anyways, I will say one of the other coolest parts of the movie was Neve Campbell's best friend, Rose McGowan.
Yes, Rose, that's right.
Who goes out into the garage during the party. And it's kind of like fucking, like, the killer just thinks that it's, like, because at this point, everybody's dressing up like the killer, you know, as, like, almost a joke. And so she assumes it's, like, her boyfriend trying to, like, fuck with her or something like that. And she does end up, again, besting him in physical combat. But the problem was that then she tried to escape through what I can only describe as a doggy door on a garage.
As you do, because you leave your dog in the garage, but you want them to have indoor-outdoor access.
You could put it. There's so many other places on a garage that you could put it that is not literally a death trap if anything got stuck in there. And that's what happened, was she started to climb through there, couldn't fit, and so he's like, oh, I'm going to push the garage door opener, and she just goes up in the air with it and has her neck basically crushed and destroyed. It's just her hanging loosely from the top of the garage door.
That one always stuck with me. There are things like that that I still think about that when I go through garages. I don't... Ugh. Shit.
So, anyway, so...
My
notes just that I read through sometimes, I'm like, what the fuck was I thinking when I was writing these notes? So in the end, basically, it's a series of people start leaving the party, like, and Neve Campbell doesn't know it because she's upstairs fucking her boyfriend.
Oops.
Which is weird. I don't know why she's like, I'm going to do it. It's going to be right now. And so everybody basically leaves this party except for this one weird guy who is, like, super into horror movies the entire time. And he's the one who's always telling people the rules of horror movies. Like, virgins always live and people who have sex die.
Which actor is that's playing that role?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. That is, of course...
Is that Matthew Lillard's character?
Nope, it's not. God, why did I just... I seriously had him
ask
listed.
The question.
Okay, it was Jamie Kennedy.
Oh, Jamie Kennedy, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, boy,
random
Jamie
Kennedy.
Kennedy.
And I will say this, one of the random characters that just lived at the end. And I was like so many
that
people
guy?
Died in this movie. And he just shows up at the end and is like, hey, guys.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, hey, Jamie. So, yeah. So, evidently, a lot less people died in this end. You just felt like there were so many times when you saw people get stabbed by him. You just assume they're dead. And, like, at the end, like, they're not. Courtney Cox finally figures out how to take the... after this... like ballroom, what's the thing called? Like the parlor room scene where the killers explain exactly why they killed her. Apparently, her mom had like had sex with her dad and ended up ruining their marriage and stuff like that. And so that's why he killed her and then decided to be poetic a year later to kill her daughter.
Don't be an adulterer,
give this
I guess.
Long
is
explanation.
The moral.
Stab each other because they're like, that's what we have to stab each other. So it looks
that's
like we got
right.
stabbed too. And then we blame it on the dad. And so I'm like, why did you stab yourself before you killed Neve Campbell? Like, you could just kill her and do it afterwards, but you did it beforehand. So one of the guys is just, like, bleeding out this entire time.
Yeah.
Which is very disturbing. But yeah, so Monica from Friends ends up coming in and shoots the dude in the head once she figures out how to get the safety off the gun.
Very good.
Do-do-do-do-do. So just a little bit of trivia.
Let's do it.
The high school scenes were to be shot at Santa Rosa High School in California. However, very close to the shooting date, like so super close, the school board read the script and denied the film to be shot there due to the violent nature.
What?
Apparently,
really?
They had thought it was going to be a comedy. So
Scream.
Yeah. So it was instead.
No, the movie would have been called Laughs. Come on, guys.
Laughter.
Get with the program.
I did read a thing. It's not on my trivia, but it was originally supposed to be called Scary Movie. Which ironically is the spoof of the movie that came out later.
Yes, Scary Movie. Oh my gosh.
As a payback, director Wes Craven put in the end credits under the special thanks section in all caps, no thanks whatsoever to the Santa Rosa City School District Governing Board. I love petty shit like that.
It's really good. Petty stuff like that is golden. I love it.
Okay. Another fun fact, the use of caller ID increased more than threefold after the release of this film.
Okay.
Apparently a lot of people were looking to get caller ID because they didn't want to get murdered.
I bet there were a lot of weird crank calls about stuff like this after that
absolutely.
Came out.
Absolutely. For sure. Drew Barrymore and Neve Campbell did not meet Roger Jackson. Now, Roger Jackson was basically a voice actor only who did the voice of the Scream guy. So he was on the phone calls. He was the voice for all of those. The actor who played before shooting commenced, I'm losing track of my notes. Whenever they were talking on the phone to the killer, they're actually talking to him. In fact, none of the cast met him. Craven thought it would be better to bring out the shock reactions he needed from everyone when they heard that voice. Basically, they thought, hey, like, we're going to have you talk to this guy that you've never met in your life, because then it is more scary and stuff like that. Because
okay.
Other than being like, oh, that's Jerry.
It's just Jerry. It's fine.
Yeah.
Jerry Bear.
Yeah, Roger and I had dinner last night, so.
It's an NBD.
He's a sweetheart.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
To keep Drew Barrymore looking scared and crying, director Wes Craven kept telling her real life stories about animal cruelty. She is a keen animal lover in real life, and so this broke her heart over and over again.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Wes Craven, real brutal.
No thanks whatsoever.
Sorry. So here's a little more facts about this. So the film was released in December, as I mentioned, 5 days before Christmas. The studio did this because during the holiday season, family-friendly movies are usually released, and the studio wanted to give the horror audience something to see during a time with no horror movies would be out. It opened at number 4 with $6.4 million on its opening weekend, which led to the studio believing that the film had flopped. However, the film's good word of mouth is what led to its success at the box office, with every week it went up or stayed about the same. By the end of its run, it ended up making, again, the $170 million. So it was like, it was more consistency than anything, was just that it kept staying around like $6 to $10 million every week, and it just kept doing that over and over and over again. Lastly, the film was sent over to the MPAA over 9 times for reconsideration, as they were going to slap the movie with an NC-17 rating. That would have been...
For what reason?
just a lot of just violence. With each time the MPAA made Wes Craven cut out more of the film's gore-heavy shots, Bob Weinstein eventually had to step in, which secured the film's R rating. Wes Craven wanted to know what Bob Weinstein had said to the MPAA to get them to change the rating. He said, "Why don't you view the movie as a comedy and not a horror film?" And apparently that completely changed the MPAA's viewpoint. Which Weird. Is funny because it wasn't a comedy. It was just like, they just like view it that way. And they're like, okay, all right, it's rated R.
There was some fun. I mean, in that it was meta, I would say some aspects of it were kind of, but not really.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So
interesting
anyways, I've talked too long on this. Scream.
Scream deserved it though because it was a genre changer. Like breathed new life, but then also took it away from a genre that was kind of dead. Like you go, and then I stabbed you. So okay, well thank you. Well, I'm gonna cover I Know What You Did Last Summer, which I want to go ahead and give it 2 thumbs down.
Oh,
this
no.
movie sucks. I rewatched it this week. I was like, man, this is bad. Listen, in 97 we got this film and it was full of the hottest 90s bitches and bitchettes. Listen, I'm covering I Know What You Did Last Summer, not to be confused with I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, which was the sequel, but also not to be confused with, hey, what are you doing next summer? I really like this getting murdered thing that we have going on. It's a good arrangement. I like it.
Hey, what are you doing next summer?
What are you doing next summer? I'd like to get like stabbed in the throat just like one more time before you go to college, of course. So the cast of the original version included Jennifer Love Hewitt, who played Julie James. And of course, Jennifer Love Hewitt was forever typecast as like the perky boobed meek brunette next door who is not a good actress. I'm sorry, Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Sorry.
I'm not sorry. You're not a very good actress. I couldn't act better than you could, but I also wouldn't enter this realm. Because I'm not good at it. So Freddie Prinze Jr. playing Ray Bronson, which is Julie's boyfriend. He's every preteen's dreamboat boyfriend in the late 90s. And then you've got Sarah Michelle Gellar playing Helen Shivers. And of course, Sarah Michelle Gellar's typecast is like the catty, sexy bitch blonde in every film in the 90s. And then, of course, Ryan Philippe, Philippe. I don't know. He plays Barry Cox. He's like the ramen-haired cutie boy who kind of looked like the Justin Timberlake version 1.0.
I think this is the second week in a row you've used the term ramen-haired, and I love that term so much now.
It's good. Well, you know, maybe ramen hair will be the next trend that comes back from the 90s. If there is a God, we will have ramen hair in 2021. Okay, from this point on, nobody cares about the characters' names. I'm just going to call the actors by their names because you don't remember Helen.
That's what
Julie,
I did. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. It just works out best that way. So this gruesome quadsome had just finished watching Sarah Michelle Gellar's character win some like country ass beauty pageant thing at this like fair. And then they go to some beach to drink. Of course, the beach is called Dawson's Beach. Winky wink. Well, because Dawson's Creek. And they tell urban legends, which gets Jennifer Love Hewitt's character like so hot that she's like, wow, you're about to go to college. We're all about to go to college. Boyfriend, now is the time to lose my virginity.
It's no
like,
better time
okay.
to get hot and bothered than on a beach by yourself in the dark.
Telling urban legends. be like, wow, I'm so scared. Let's make a baby. Excuse me?
Right now.
Let's do it right now. So Sarah Michelle Gellar and Ryan Philippe's character are so trashed. The acting is poor. He's just like, I'm so trash. This is my car. I'm driving. And she's like, man, you're trash. But he insists on driving them back like a cool guy. But Freddie Prinze Jr. is like, no, I'm driving. Like, we're not actually going to die this early in the film. And so
everybody looks at me. He's like, wait, what?
Yeah. So Freddie Prinze and Jennifer Love Hewitt are in the front seat giving each other googly eyes because they just made a baby. And then the drunk pairs in the back being awful and like turning up the radio and spilling booze everywhere. And then Ryan Philippe like throws the sunroof down and like stands up and is like, woo, woo. And of course, if you recall, they're going down this like beach road, like, and then they take a curve and they hit someone. And they hit someone and it like smashes Ryan Philippe in the face and he's all bloody, but it's not his own blood. It's the blood of the guy that they hit. Of course, at the beach, they've been telling an urban legend about like a one-hooked fisherman. Well, guess what they hit? They hit one-handed fisherman. I don't know how to say that right, but like
it was a fish man with hook hands.
Fishman Prophecies. I hate this Ashton Kutcher movie.
Prophecies.
So they hit him. They're like, shit, it's such a bad thing. So like they're sitting there freaking out, and they start realizing like, we should call the police. And they're like, no, like I've been drunk. Well, I mean, there was no drunk driving, but there was alcohol spilled all in the car. The car was registered to Ryan Philippe, who was super drunk at the time. And they're like, we can't fuck this up for us. We got to just like throw him into the water. He's right there. We're just throwing him in the water. And of course, coming around the corner is a guy named Max, played by an actor whose name I don't remember and is unimportant to the film. He had been slighted by the crew as he was hitting on Jennifer Love Hewitt's character at the fair previously. Mm-hmm. So they come around and they're like he drives by and they have just gotten the body on the other side of the road. He has no pulse. He's dead, right? Mm-hmm. So they've got him on the other side of the like barrier. And he's like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, don't worry about it. My friend's sick. He's throwing up. It's cool. And he's like, oh, okay. So they take this body down to the dock and they throw him into the water. But right as they do, right as they're getting ready to throw him into the water, they're like checking his wallet to check his ID to be like, we need to know who this person is. They go in for his wallet. Sarah Michelle Gellar does, because everyone else is too chicken shit to do it. Mm-hmm. He suddenly wakes up, springs to life, grabs her crown. She's wearing the crown that she won at the pageant.
What?
And then they're like, ah, yeah. He grabs the crown and they like flick him into the water. Like, yeet. They just yeet this dead body. Well, not dead body.
Not
into
dead
the
body,
water.
Apparently.
Not dead body. And then she's like, my crown. She's so worried about her Hill God. County Fair crown that she like, Ryan Philippe is like, shit. And he jumps into the water and he sees the body and it's just floating, you know, sunk, but it's floating. And he's got, I'm doing the floating motion. You can't see it. But he's holding onto the crown and he goes down and he tries to get the crown. And of course the guy's eyes open up and just stares at him. And he, you know, Ryan Philippe screams, goes up there, throws the crown at Sarah Michelle Gellar. And then like, we got to get out of here. So it's a whole thing. You're like, he's not dead. It's spooky. This was a horrible mistake. So they fast forward about a year. The whole crew has gone off to college, done their own thing. Sarah Michelle or Jennifer Love Hewitt's characters. And why does everyone have three names? Freddie Prinze Jr., Sarah Michelle Gellar, Jennifer Love Hewitt. I'm like vomiting words at you right now. I'm doing the best I can. So they go off to college. They come back and they're like, everything's bad. Jennifer Love Hewitt's mom gives her a letter that was handwritten and it was addressed to the house. And it just says, I know what you did last summer, but for some reason, this has cracked me up, Andy. It says, I know what you did last summer. It's in all caps written in Sharpie with an exclamation point at the end. Now, something about the exclamation point at the end made me laugh really hard. Like,
yeah,
it feels like Madison.
You're trying to be ominous, like, and be kind of creepy. Like, cause like, you have these people, like, you know what they did last summer. You don't need to yell it. Like, this, you're not shouting to anyone. You're giving me a personal letter.
Yeah, this is, like, punctuation takes away from the scariness. Like, Oxford commas and stuff like that. Just write it in lower, just throw in all
some,
lowercase.
Throw in some semicolons.
Just give him an asterisk for what reason. And then just leave him hanging. That's the real cliffhanger of this movie. Nothing else was exciting about this, but the asterisk did it. But this freaks Jennifer Love Hewitt's character out so bad that she like pieces out to go find the rest of the crew who are also like back in town and like on the struggle bus because they fucked everything up in life. Like, well, it turns out if you hit someone with your car and you kill them, nothing goes right for you from there on. Just going to put that out there. So Ryan Philippe's character goes to like they're all getting these notes, right? So they go to confront Max, the guy that they know saw them that night. And so he's working at the docks, and that's, of course, where Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character works as well. And, like, he threatens him, he punches him, he slices his face a little bit. He was like, stay out of our lives. He's like, I did it. I'm a big – like, the whole time Ryan Philippe's character has, like, crazy anger management problems throughout the whole film. And so he's like, I took care of it, guys. Fuck you. See you later. And then you're like, well, it was definitely that Max guy. Like, for sure it was him. You know, he saw
he's
them.
He's still
in town. Yeah. And then, like, immediately thereafter, he gets hooked in the throat by the killer. And you're like, well, that's actually a pretty good move. That's a pretty good move to take this key suspect out right off the bat. And it's like, okay.
I feel like that's what some would call a bad move. Like, just
well,
like...
No, but if it's the key suspect, you're like, well, then who the hell is it? If you got the crew, like, it's like, of course it was this guy. He saw them that night. He's the only one still around in town. He knows where everyone lives. It's this guy. It was not this guy.
I'm just saying, like, it takes away a lot of the suspense and the, like, and the worry and everything like that, but...
Yeah, well, everyone, so once they realize that like Max is dead, everyone starts suspecting Freddie Prinze Jr. because he seems awfully suspect for a guy who's not getting stabbed a lot, whereas everybody else is getting stabbed a lot. Like,
hold on. How many times would you say that the people that are still alive got stabbed and stayed alive?
So many. Like, so not, many not many. Not many. But, like, listen.
I mean, I guess one stab is enough. Like, I don't care if it's multiple.
Because it's like, if it's a stab, but this guy has a hook. And it's not like a hook. It's like a... almost not. Well, I don't think that's the right word. Not meat cleaver. That is not the right word. But like a fisherman. So like if you're carrying ice, like ice hooks, like that. Not ice picks, but ice hooks. Anyway, I'm not a fisherman.
I'm looking up an image of this hook.
Yeah. So it's really sharp. Damn. It's really curved. Yeah. And so you get hooked by that, you're done. So like the crew starts getting destroyed. Okay. So they find what is it? Ryan Philippe's character gets hit by a car, gets hit by the killer in the street. He slams him into a building. Mm-hmm. And then the killer gets out and is like, you know, standing over him. And he's like, I'm going to kill you. But he doesn't. He just lets him end up in the hospital. And everyone's like, well, it's definitely Freddie Prinze Jr. because it's a fisherman. And he's the only fisherman left that we know. And I'm going to be honest with you. I realized in my show notes, I didn't write down who the killer was. I don't know how to remember.
It was me.
So listen, let's see. Ryan Philippe gets hooked.
Muse Watson, it says, is the...
Muse Watson?
Is Ben Willis slash Fisherman.
Slash Fisherman. I'm going to be really embarrassed. I was trying to take so many show notes and then I got distracted by kids and it's like, I don't remember if it was the person that I think it is or not. So now if Andy can spoil it for us at the end, that would be awesome to give me the finale to the show. I'm so embarrassed.
The finale?
Because there was Anne Heche's character was in there and there was talk about it being her brother, but it wasn't her brother. At one point they discovered this. It's been a whole weekend with a projector and shit like that. But let's talk about how other people get killed first. Okay. There's a really funny scene where Max, the guy that got hooked in the throat at the beginning, the first suspect, he shows up in Jennifer Love Hewitt's trunk and he is crawling with crabs. So she hears like all the scritching and stuff in her trunk. She opens it up.
I very much remember the crab scene.
You do remember the crab scene. It was a horrible body cast, but I was looking at the trivia and they apparently said that like when she saw the cast or something like that they had to shut down filming because she was so upset because it looked so similar to him. And he had to call her and be like, I am not dead, sweetie. But it was not a very good cast, and she's a bad actress and kind of a winner, if I'm being totally honest.
It's fun trivia, but let me just rag on her real hard.
Yeah, so, and then what happens then? Ryan Philippe's character is watching Sarah Michelle Gellar's character at another pageant, and he gets hooked in the stomach and, like, slashed up while she's watching from down below, and she starts screaming and, like... That's a cool scene. That was a cool scene where she's losing her shit down below and can see that he's getting murdered. And then she... This is the part that I realize is actually pretty darn scary. The fisherman chases her across town and into her sister's shop. So her sister owns like a clothing shop or something. The fisherman kills her sister in the store, and it's like a two-story old clothing shop, like in an old downtown area. And then there's this crazy chase sequence, and then she is trying to get away from him, and it ends up being this like he ends up killing her in an alley beside like a nighttime parade. It's weird.
That's what I'm talking about. Kind of like the thing from Scream where they killed her, like when she was feet away from her parents, like the horrible feeling, like just watching someone be murdered when they're so close to rescue.
Yeah. It's gnarly. It was a whole thing. It was scary because like there's a marching band playing and so they're marching and she's like in a pile of like tires. Okay. And so it's just the whole thing. And then shortly thereafter, Jennifer Love Hewitt goes to confront Freddie Prinze Jr. She's like, it's you the killer. And it's not, it's this fisherman guy that is not him. So like, cause then he starts whooping everybody else's ass. And this is where I apologize. I thought in my head that I had taken notes that it was the brother. I don't think it is the brother. It says he murdered.
I think it's the dude they hit with the car the year before.
Well, for sure. But I just can't. Who is he? Damn it!
It says
I realized
Ben Willis slash fisherman.
A fisherman, just a fisherman. Okay.
I don't know who Ben Willis is, but that's his name.
Okay. Well, Ben Willis is the killer. Go back and watch the movie. Tell me how it goes for you guys. But the end of the sequence, end of the film, is that the fisherman's hands gets chopped off, okay? And they're like, mm-hmm. and then he gets like yeeted into the water, and Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jennifer Love Hewitt are fine. There's this, by the way, the chase sequence of Jennifer Love Hewitt on this boat is ridiculous. She does the worst job in history of the world trying to get away from this dude on the boat. She's just like, I'm going to back myself into this corner and be like, oh no, I'm stuck in this corner. And then he slowly walks to come get her. And then she goes to another area and it's a whole thing. But at the end of the movie, she's on a phone call with her boyfriend, Freddie Prinze Jr. in the movie. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about everything. And then she's in the shower stall and it's all steamy.
Thank goodness. Everything
she's
is good.
She's in the shower. She's like, I'm in the shower. This is great. And of course, as you do in any horror movie, the whole room fills with steam. She comes back in and on the stall it says, I still know. And then I think she gets attacked and then boom, the movie is over, which is just like, hello, Sequel City. So they set it up for a series of really bad repeat films. I feel like I remember the Scream sequels being pretty good, too.
Yeah, I think
it's
too. Like, I still know what you did last summer and stuff. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention the Scream thing. There is a Scream 5 coming out in 2021, so enjoy that.
Yes! Amazing. I'm so happy. I'm so happy to hear that. But that's I Know What You Did Last Summer. You can go back and watch it if you want to. It features a lot of 90s fashion, some cuties from that era, very bad acting. It's just not as good as Scream. If I were you, I'd go back and put my time on Scream.
I feel like, so I just kind of checked the budget and box office. Very similar budget, about $17 million. And box office still huge. It was $125 million for this film. I feel like partially probably because Scream had such success the year before that everyone's like, oh, finally another horror movie or whatever that's big and in the theaters. That people were just so desperate for anything that they went.
Yep. They just went, we won something. It was, I don't know. Scream really changed things up. This movie was like, we got it too. It's like, no, you don't. Go home. Go to bed. Take a nap. This wasn't so good. I Still Know What You Did Last Summer had Brandy, which is a pretty good addition. I like Brandy.
Is Brandy a musician? Mm-hmm. She's it sounds a very much like a musician's name.
It is a musician. Brandy, I want to say her last name is Norwood. And I know stuff like that, but not who the actual killer was at the end of the movie that I just watched like an asshole. But that's I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Beep, 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 beep.
I'm going to cast my vote for Scream.
So shout out to everybody out there. Which one did you like more, huh? Did you like hers more or mine more? Or maybe you just like remember watching both of them and thinking, huh, these are both real bad.
Oh boy,
that's fine. So
yeah, they're both. Well, no, Scream was good. Scream was good, dog.
We'll see. We'll see what comes out of it. So, anyways, thank you guys again so much for tuning in. Let's take you out with the where to find us. So, if you want to get your votes in this week, as we discussed, it always tickles me because I'm like, I know for a fact there are so many people out there that listen to the show and don't get their voice in, and it feels sad to think that they don't get a vote on these things. So if you want to get your vote in and haven't done so yet, check us out on Facebook and Twitter at 90s Court, or you can also vote on Instagram at 90s.court. So either any of those or all three of them you can vote on. If you'd like to support the show and get some bonus content and shout outs, hop onto patreon.com/90s court and maybe consider becoming a patron. And
that would be nice.
As always, hop on iTunes/Apple Podcasts and leave us a nice 5-star rating and review, or just stop by and say, hey, we like it when you do that.
We do like it when you do that.
I just said that and I realized that's very similar to a thing that Aaron Mankey says during Lore. So I take it back. Why don't you come by and say, just like, you know, talk to us about the podcast.
Just do it. Because
he always says this thing. It's like, why don't you stop by and say, hey, I love it when people say, hey. So
it is fun. We love hearing hey. And guess what, guys? It's spooky season. Check out the podcast that we bumped in the break earlier. Get a listen to the Halloween podcast, even regardless if we're on the show or not. Just listen to it. It's a good podcast as well. And we will see you next week for episode 57, getting right up on Halloween time. Ew. So yeah, you guys take care. Oh, let me ask you, do you have any
parting remarks
before
I depart?
Yeah.
Just the usual. Stay radical.
Bye, guys.